The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they made it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, die good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around the pump crack right up when you did it. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And now it's blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who don't know the pain.
Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is the first day of March, March 1st, 2016. It is a Tuesday afternoon and I'm coming to you from a very pleasant and sunny day here in North Carolina. I just love this state and the weather that we get. I just really like it here. All right, so got a few things to talk about today. But before I do that, let me first make you aware of the need for prayer for those people who believe in the healing powers of prayer, who also believe in the healing powers of meditation. However, whatever, you know, spiritual practice that you are engaged in, if you are one of those persons, we certainly need you to keep one of our Black Talk Radio family members in your prayers, and I'm talking about Tribal Rain, who is the wife of one of our hosts on the network, host of New Abolitionist Radio and co-producer Max Parthas. I had an opportunity to meet Max and his wife a little over a week ago, and I was saddened to hear that she winded back up in the hospital about 2 days ago, was unresponsive, unconscious. She has awoken, and from the news that I'm getting is that she is improving. And so we just want to continue to send out our thoughts and our prayers to the Parthas family, specifically for Tribal Rain, and hoping that she makes a full recovery. All right, so just want the Parthas family to know that we're thinking about you and you are in our prayers. All right, before I get to a couple of the topics that I would like to discuss with you today, let me go ahead and give out those telephone numbers for anybody that would like to share any news, any information, what have you, on today's program. Of course, there is the conference line. That telephone number is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. 3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. That's 549032 pound. And star 6 and 1 puts you into the caller's queue to let me know that you would like to come on air. You can also use our web-based flash phone to accomplish the same task. Same telephone numbers apply. And you will be able to connect from anywhere in the world as long as, obviously, you have an internet connection. Because if you're hearing the sound of my voice and this being internet radio, then, of course, you know, you have to be able to access the internet to use that phone. The conference line number, let me go ahead and make sure the conference line is open. That telephone number is 704 704-951-5030. That phone number, once again, is 704-951-5030. All right, so got a couple of stories that I would like to share with you today. This is a story that came out over the past couple of days. Well, first, let me just give you a rundown of some of the possible stories I like to discuss with you. This is a story that isn't getting a whole lot of attention. In fact, it's not even a U.S.-based website that I found this article on, about three Muslims, and they are black men who were gunned down in Indiana. And the mainstream corporate media is silent on this issue. All right. So that's one of the stories that I would like to share with you to talk about that. Also, we have a number of protests going on across the country in relation to police terrorism. There is a huge protest that has been going on in Utah, Salt Lake City, where you have a 17-year-old who was shot four times in the chest and stomach by police for carrying a broomstick. Now, I also heard about a case here in North Carolina up near the Raleigh area where you had a young black man who was suspected of being involved in drug dealing or whatever. And he was running from the police, and the initial reports, again, not getting a whole lot of information from corporate media about it, but he was shot in the back. That's what his mother is saying, that he was shot in the back. So those are a couple of stories that people should be aware of. And I think there is another place where, you know, another person's been killed by police in the United States, but I just can't recall it right now. This is something I was discussing with some people yesterday. Justice Clarence Thomas asked some of his first questions in more than 10 years. I'm not quite sure how long Clarence Thomas has been on the bench of the Supreme Court of the United States. I think he got confirmed in the 80s. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was the 80s. The Reagan administration, I believe, is the one that, or it could have been H.W. Bush, you know, Daddy Bush, who nominated him. But he asked some questions, and it's been a running joke for a very long time that, you know, people would clown him and say things like, you know, he's an intellectual midget, or, you know, he's not very smart, and that's evident because he doesn't ask questions when he's hearing cases, and you have these attorneys arguing either side of a case at the Supreme Court, and he just never asked any questions. So he asked some questions in what I feel like is a very important case. I'm not so sure if it has wider implications, but perhaps it does, considering that this case is relating to lifetime Second Amendment right punishment, taking away your Second Amendment rights, your right to own a gun, which has been confirmed already by the Supreme Court. And certainly that is something that I think all of these gun rights advocates should be thanking the Black Panther for, and Black Panther Party for, specifically the late great Huey Newton, because from my studying, you know, he is the first person that I came across in recent history, meaning, you know, 30, 40 years, that was advocating that the Constitution does confer upon citizens of the United States a Second Amendment right to own firearms. And certainly that is how the Black Panther Party got started, as a self-defense unit, an armed self-defense unit in the black community, to protect people from police terrorism and whatnot. And this is what this case that Clarence Thomas weighed in on is pertaining to, you know, people getting convicted over misdemeanor misdemeanor domestic violence cases, and it's two men. I guess they combined the two cases, and now it's before the Supreme Court, and they have a lifetime ban on owning firearms. One of the guys, his wife was drunk, so he says, and they got into it, and he slapped her with an open hand. And so he got convicted of misdemeanor assault, and now his Second Amendment rights have been banned for life. The other one was a case where a husband and wife got into an argument, and the husband pushed the wife. And so he got convicted on a misdemeanor charge, and now his Second Amendment rights have been taken away from him for life. And while people are, most of the articles I've read, about three or four, just to get a general feel for how the media, the mainstream media, is looking at this case, and they're mostly focusing on clowning Justice Thomas and not really giving the man credit for posing some very serious, pertinent, relevant questions as it pertains to people having their constitutional rights stripped away from them for life. And I think that's a very important case that's not getting the attention that it should be getting. All right, a Texas man, and this pertains to the people activity area of politics, number 6 on counter racist Neely Fuller's list. But you have a black woman who is running for sheriff in Texas. Which county is that in Texas? I'm not sure. Jefferson County, Texas. You have this black woman by the name of Zena Stevens, and she is in a primary race against two other Democrats in Jefferson County, as they try to get elected to become sheriff. And whoever wins will then face off against a Republican in the general election. See, this is what I keep talking about, or, you know, I try to mention, that voting, elections and stuff are more than just about determining who will be the next CEO of America, who will be the next corporate officer sent to Washington, D.C. to be the representative for whatever district that they are hailing from, as members of the board members of USA Inc. USA Inc. Yes, indeed. Our government is a corporation, incorporating in 1871. And so these elections are more than just about determining who the nominee will be for any party that's putting up a nominee for president. It's more than just about senators. It's more than just about representatives in the United States House. But it's also about electing local sheriffs, local mayors, local city council members. I don't think police chiefs run for, I don't think those are elected offices. I think those people are appointed to those positions by mayor or city council. But my point is that it's more than just about participating in the federal elections. There are a lot of important positions that have a direct impact on your life, more so than a U.S. representative, more so than a senator, more so than the CEO. Although those positions are important, and, you know, they do pass laws that can affect us, but, you know, in terms of how your jail, your county jail, is run, and whether or not people are going to get beat up in there by guards and stomped to death, or forced to fight, prisoners being forced to fight each other, you know, in like a gladiator type contest with the guards running everything. A sheriff determines how that jail will be run. Either that sheriff is going to make sure that people are not being abused in that jail, or they're just going to, you know, act like, you know, nothing is happening, and, you know, not trying to address any of the criminality on behalf of their deputies. So, again, you know, in my opinion, and I know, you know, we all have a difference of opinion, voting is very very, very important, in my opinion. All right, so that's one of the stories. This woman, black woman, is running for sheriff in Jefferson County, Texas. And a suspected racist white supremacist, I mean, if this report is true, we can confirm him as being a racist. I'm going to have to start watching how I use words, because even though he may be white and he may be racist, there's nothing supreme about him. He is not a Hillary Clinton. He's not a Bill Clinton. He's not a former Secretary of State. He's not a cabinet member of the, he just po white fucking trash. And he's a racist. I wouldn't call him a supremacist, because there's nothing supreme about him. They ain't in no position of supremacy or whatnot. But he fired into her campaign headquarters. Thankfully, no one was hurt. There were about 25 people in her office at the time of the attack, which occurred at night. And you had, this guy, he's been arrested, this white male, and he was shouting, F the niggers and whatnot, as he shot, into this black woman's campaign headquarters. And then last but not least, this is also dealing with politics. This is coming to you from imixwhatilike.org. imixwhatilike.org. And this is a commentary from Black Agenda Reports, Glenn Ford with the Ford Report. And he talks about the potential value to progressive movements should Trump and Sanders supporters break from the two political parties. And in fact, that I would like to mention again, if you are a black person that does vote, if you don't vote, I'm not talking to you, but if you do vote and you consider yourself to be conscious, there are different degrees of consciousness, there's no qualifier or whatnot, but if you would like to join with other black voters in a movement to build a black political institution, then check out IamOneOfTheMillion.com, IamOneOfTheMillion.com, where you can find out information about the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. Please take a look at that. I don't think it's too late now for us to have an impact on the current elections, but it's not too late to build an independent black organization that is going to be advocating on behalf of black people everywhere, not just here in the United States, but everywhere, and participating in not only electoral politics, but also in what we call it, cooperative economics or group economics. Which is area number one on the 9 areas of people activity as put forth by counter-racist Needy Fuller. I am of the opinion that black people should not, let me say that again, black people should not ignore any area of people activity, that we should be involved in them all. And that not just being involved, but also being effective in working to become effective in whatever areas we are working in, whether that's economics, whether that's education. Shout out to the black educators out there that is pushing for the independence of educating our black children, whether you're involved in entertainment, whether you're involved in labor, politics, religion, sex, or war. We have to become masters in all areas of people activity, because to not do so is to concede ground to our enemies. So that's what's on the table for today. Let me see. Tando Radio Show will be coming on at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I am not sure if Why You Mad Son Radio will be back on air tonight. I think they come on air at 9 o'clock or is it 10 o'clock on Tuesdays. They took February off, but I have yet to hear from the producer of that program. I need to reach out to her to see if they will be doing any live streaming tonight. In a couple of weeks, about 3 weeks from now, we will be launching a new program on this digital radio station, Black Talk Radio Network, our digital radio station, elevating new black media for the new millennium, bringing you black independent voices 24/7. So we're looking to add Hoosea Talk Radio here on Tuesday nights in just about 3 weeks, and we'll be sending out more information about that. If you would like to get updates and what have you pertaining to the platform blacktalkradionetwork.com, you can subscribe to all the content of the network via email. If you just put in your email address in the widget that you will find on every page off to the right on every page of our website, you will see a little widget that says subscribe to content via email. And so you just enter your email address and hit subscribe, and you will get updates on not just Black Talk Radio News, not just Tando Radio Show, but all the different programs, whether they are on this digital radio station or whether they are one of our media partners slash clients in operating their own digital radio stations. Granted, if they're posting their program information, their individual program information to the website. All right, so you can also, of course, follow us on social media. We have a number of social media accounts for the various programs. We also have different social media accounts that focus on separate issues. Like, we got Watch a Cop, which shares stories about police terrorism on this timeline. We got Proxy Racism, which tries to educate people on the fact that non-white people do indeed assist white supremacists and racist whites in their practice of racism. So we also have the Racism Report, which was launched about a month and a half ago. It's, as you can imagine, just news stories focusing on racism, no matter where it is in the world. So those are just a few of the social media accounts that we have that you can follow, and you can also find those right there on our website, our platform, blacktalkradionetwork.com. At this time, before I jump into the first story, I want to take a station identification break, kick a little message music, and then we'll come back and jump on this first story. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. We'll be right back.
No, it really isn't. Because, see, people are thinking in terms of, well, they want to brag about being black, which means that they are implying that there's something incorrect about being white, even though these are the creations of the Creator. See, and then so everybody gets into this black pride thing or white pride thing, and people immediately start taking sides. It's not about taking sides based on black and white. It's about taking sides based on justice and non-justice. Well, that's what you're really aiming for. Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. And being white doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice, except you mean in, you believe in non-justice. And that doesn't make any difference what shade you are or how tall you are or who your cousin was or anything like that. or what so-called nationality you have. Like a lot of people say that they take pride in being an Englishman, or take pride in being a Frenchman, or take pride in being Afrocentric. Well, you're not supposed to be proud of any of those things if you don't believe in justice, because these words mean nothing. No nationality means anything. And waving a flag, if you don't believe in not mistreating people, you've got to believe in not mistreating people, and you got to believe in helping people that need help the most. Otherwise, you don't even have any business breathing.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed. Now, I want to jump first to this story about brokered conventions and party breakups. Would make Tuesday, what is this, truly super. All right, so for those that are engaged in politics and whatnot, you know today is Super Tuesday. I mentioned that yesterday. I was incorrect about the number of states that are holding primaries and caucuses to determine the two major parties' nominees for president. I think it's only 12 states that are having those brokered conventions. Having those primaries. I think I mentioned yesterday just how we got good news and bad news out of one of the early states, and that is South Carolina, that has one of the larger populations of black people. And I discussed that yesterday. You know, with black people, 87%. The bad news was 80% of the Democratic voters, those that voted in the Democratic primary, 6 out of 10 of those were black voters. All right. 6 black voters versus 3 white voters participated in the Democratic primaries in South Carolina. Now, 87%, I believe it was, it might have been 84%, but upwards of 80% of those black voters supported a known white supremacist racist like Hillary Clinton. Now, if those people that voted, I'm quite sure a number of them don't know Hillary Clinton's long 30-40 year history of practicing codified racism and white supremacy, and therefore, you know, they were, what I'm seeing is primarily from black females that they just voting for this woman cause she's a woman. I'm seeing articles that are pushing straight up lies about Bernie Sanders and lies about Hillary Clinton being produced by black self-described feminists. All right, they're not calling themselves black feminists. They just calling themselves feminists. And it appears that these women are feminist first and black comes, you know, last. And so they're voting a feminist agenda and engaging in identity politics, which isn't good at all for anyone. We like to think, and sometimes it's the case, that if we vote for someone and get them in the office that looks like us, that they will be empathetic towards us and that they will practice justice. But as proxy racism shows us, that ain't always the case. So you just simply cannot be voting for people based on their skin color. You simply cannot be voting for people based on their gender, what they got swinging or not swinging in between their legs. That's just not logical. It's just not logical. All right, that is not how things work to your benefit. You know, that's just an unsophisticated way to cast an uninformed vote. And in fact, you know, I take voting so serious, you know, I make sure that I know what's going on in my area locally, and knowing what offices are open, who's running, who wants to be the next sheriff, who wants to be the next state senator, and all of that. And to be honest with you, I'm actually been contemplating on whether or not I want to run for a state senator's position here out of my county, but I'm not going to do it this election cycle. So today is Super Tuesday. Even though today could determine who will possibly have a insurmountable lead in the delegate counts, whether that's on the Republican side. If, you know, I've been hearing that if Donald Trump wins all of the 12 states that's participating in the primaries today, that he's pretty much got the Republican nomination locked up. Now, on the Democratic side, the same could be said for Hillary Clinton. If she wins the majority of the states today, she will have an insurmountable lead. So today, Super Tuesday, is a very important day in terms of presidential politics. All right. And so Bernie Sanders, I was checking out some news reports yesterday, and he was saying that, you know, if he doesn't do well today in those different states, that, hey, he's in it for the long haul. He's in it going all the way up to the convention, which will be held in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in July of this year. And so he's in it to win it. But even though if he does not secure the nomination, see, this comes with political education. I swear, man, that was probably one of the most important programs that the Black Panther Party had going on in the 60s and the 70s was a political education class in teaching people how politics work and how to leverage coalitions of votes. Voting blocks and how they can make a change in you know, that was very important. And so, you know, in educating those who may not be as educated on the issue, just because Hillary Clinton may have the nomination wrapped up does not mean that Bernie Sanders and you know, all of his delegates and supporters do not have a say in what the platform is going to be. And so, you know, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to listen along with you to Mr. Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report. They do a lot of great work. You can check them out at blackagendareport.com. And I want to hear what Mr. Ford has to say about brokered conventions and party breakups. Would make Tuesday truly super. Again, shout out to I Mix What You Like for publishing this, and also a shout out to the Real News Network in Baltimore.
Welcome everyone back to the Real News Network. I'm Jared Ball here in Baltimore. Joining us once again for his Ford Report is executive editor and founder of BlackAgendaReport.com, Glenn Ford. Glenn, welcome back to the Real News, and I understand you want to talk with us a little bit about Super Tuesday.
That's going to be a Super Tuesday, Jared. I think that there is a real possibility, and I'm not going to make a prediction on this, but I think there's a real possibility that both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party will fracture. That is, they will come apart at the seams at their national conventions in Cleveland and in Philadelphia this summer. And that, of course, would be historically magnificent. And when I say that, it's not like saying a plague on both your houses, because really, it's only this duopoly system is only one house, it's one party with two different names, and both of them are controlled by Wall Street. So a plague on Wall Street's houses. Black voters in particular are not just captives of the Democratic Party, they're captives of this duopoly system, and that duopoly system is what keeps them in the Democratic Party. It now appears that both wings of this rich man's party are on the verge of a split. On Super Tuesday, that will become a closer possibility, especially for the Republicans. Donald Trump could become unbeatable after these 12 states have their primaries on Tuesday. Significant segments of the Republican Party are already saying that they cannot back the GOP if Donald Trump is at the top of the ticket. And others are talking about a brokered convention in Cleveland. And in a brokered convention, all of the delegates that Trump has not won would be, there'd be an attempt to unify them behind some other candidate. And although that may or may not deny Trump the nomination, it certainly would infuriate his followers. And Trump's followers at present constitute 49% of the Republican Party. And that's more than all of his primary opponents combined. They don't add up to 49% of the party. On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders has almost no hope of winning the nomination in Philadelphia. And that's largely because of the black vote, which went for Hillary Clinton 6-1 in South Carolina this past Saturday. We will probably see a similar kind of black support for Clinton in Arkansas and Georgia, in Tennessee, in Alabama, and in Virginia on Super Tuesday. But just because she is winning the delegates and will almost certainly have enough to win the nomination in Philadelphia does not mean that Hillary Clinton is the choice of the Democratic rank and file. A new Reuters poll has come out, and it shows Bernie Sanders 6 points ahead in popularity among Democrats. And two other polls show Sanders 2 points ahead of Hillary Clinton. So youngish white Democrats clearly favor Bernie Sanders. And if they believe that Hillary Clinton or the Democratic National Committee is abusing their candidate, if they feel insulted by the party, then they are liable to bolt. And they are liable to bolt from the party in a loud and disruptive fashion in Philadelphia this summer. If both Donald Trump's followers and Bernie Sanders' followers wind up breaking with their parties, or in Trump's case, we might see the party breaking from him, we could be on the road to having a three or even four party system, which is much healthier and much more like the systems, the electoral systems in most of the industrial world. But whichever way it goes, either way, this is going to be a good year for Jill Stein and the Green Party, because when Sanders loses, the Greens profit.
Glenn, I hear you say that. I'm wondering how accurate that is. I mean, you touched on it a little bit in the sense that the problem for the issue with the Republicans is that the Republican establishment wants to get rid of Trump. Even former CIA director saying the CIA would basically stop listening to him were he to be elected president. But with the Democrats, it's the establishment that wants Hillary, that doesn't want Sanders. So I'm wondering, it sounds like from the Democratic side, it would require more of a push from below to create this division that you think would be beneficial for the rest of us, as opposed to a top-down dissolution, so to speak, of the convention, as we would see with the Republicans. And I'm just wondering if that is likely. I mean, wouldn't Bernie Sanders supporters, despite the claims of some, just end up going back to the Democratic Party? You don't see that as a concern?
Well, it depends on whether they feel really, really insulted by the party. A lot of it depends on how Bernie Sanders comports himself. Now, of course, he's been a Democrat in reality all the time. He has ranking as a Democrat. That's how he gets seniority and committee chairmanships and such. But he's 74 years old. He didn't know he was going to be this popular. People do get carried away. There is carried away on a mission. There is the human factor. I don't know. I'm not going to predict how Bernie Sanders would react if there were pressures from his his supporters to pressure the party in ways that could break it. We'll see.
Well, I love the Fanonian analysis here that as long as it breaks up, it's good for the most for the rest of us. Glenn, we thank you very much for joining us here at The Real News again for the Ford Report.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us as well, wherever you are. And again, I'm Jared Ball here in Baltimore saying for all involved, as Fred Hampton used to say to you, we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. So peace, everybody, and we'll catch you in the whirlwind.
All right. That was the Ford Report with executive editor and founder of BlackAgendaReport.com giving his opinion on the damage that's being done to both parties by the candidacies of Bernie Sanders as well as the candidacy of Donald Trump, and his conclusion that this could end up being good for a third party, a third or fourth party, as he stated. And so again, I do believe that black people are primarily black voters, and damn, it's just so sad that a white supremacist, a known white supremacist like a Hillary Clinton, is being carried to the finish line on the backs of black people. You know what I'm saying? That is just so disheartening in terms of our voter education efforts. And, you know, that is something that I'm going to have to speak with you know, the people at 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. That's something that we're going to have to focus on all the time, is voter education, because there is no logical reason that I feel that anybody who is knowledgeable about the two candidates, Bernie Sanders as well as Hillary Clinton, and the policies that they have championed in the past. When we look at the Clintons, we look at their connections to the private prisons and whatnot, helping Correction Corporations of the World. I mean, excuse me, Correction Corporation of America, the world's largest private prison, enslaver. Really got a lot of help in their early days by the Clintons in Arkansas when they were just, you know, relegated to state politics in Arkansas. And so it's just no logical reason. And the only thing I can put that on, well, there's two things I can put that on. Lack of access to proper information. All right. They're probably getting most of their information from the corporate media. Also, lack of individual initiative to educate themselves. As I talked about yesterday, a person voting for Hillary Clinton said he was voting for Hillary Clinton because he knows her name and he doesn't have time because he got a full-time job. He don't have time to do research on the other candidate to see, you know, what he's pushing and what's part of his platform. And the third reason is, unfortunately, a lot of black women are not being black first and being feminist first. So is that, you know, that's just a shame. And so we're going to have to in the coming years, as part of the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors movement, is we're going to have to really, really focus in on voter education and building. And it can't be done just on a national level, dealing with national presidential politics or any of the federal elections. I would say that since, you know, the movement is shaping up to be, you know, state by state, you know, with chapters in every state, it's going to have to also include local voter education and educating people on the various levels of politics within the state in terms of county politics that determines who the district court judge will be, that determines who the sheriff will be, the county boards and whatnot, all those different positions, county commissioners, and all of those are elected positions, school board. All of that is local politics. And then, you know, also included would be your state representatives. Again, not dealing with federal politics, but state politics, your state House representatives, your state senators, and what have you. And, of course, can't forget the governor. Also, I know here in North Carolina during this election cycle, we'll also be voting on whether or not to retain a state Supreme Court justice. So we have to have a mechanism in place to educate members of the movement of conscious black voters and contributors. We have to have a mechanism educating them on all these different aspects of electoral politics. You know, it's just, we can't afford to be casting uninformed votes, man. That's just, you might as well not vote. If you're going to vote, especially for a white supremacist or a proxy racist, you know, that isn't offering you anything in exchange for your vote, that just simply is illogical, and it cannot continue to occur in our community. And it's only going to change by us. And I'm hoping, and I know that some members of the Black Lives Matter movement are getting engaged in local politics and running for office, and I hope that they do emulate the Black Panther Party in that regard, because a lot of people who talk about the Black Panther Party want to ignore their participation in electoral politics. I mean, you even had Bobby Seale, the co-founder of the Black Panther Party, run for mayor of Oakland back in the day, and they got a lot of people registered to vote, and he didn't win, but you know, they made their voices heard and whatnot. And you know, they also had candidates that ran for president, and then, you know, well, what became of that? Well, the damn FBI, the United States government, destroyed them by assassinations, framing them for crimes they didn't commit, and things of that nature. And so, because J. Edgar Hoover said they was the greatest threat to the internal security of America, which I would translate that to say the greatest threat to white supremacy at that time. And they had to be destroyed. And so they destroyed them. Many of them are still in prison, political prisoners. Here lately, we've been seeing, you know, a few of them get out. Albert Woodfox of the Angola 3 prison chapter of the Black Panther Party just got out after 40-something years in solitary confinement and whatnot. And so, you know, we did not pick up the ball. We did not continue on with their practices. Of course, you know, a lot of people didn't want to get assassinated. I can understand that. A lot of people didn't want to get framed and sent to prison. And what I can understand that, you know, just because I understand it doesn't mean I agree with it. You know, if we're going to make changes for the sake of our children, for the sake of our community, somebody got to put it on the line. Somebody has to be willing to put their life and indeed their livelihoods on the line. You know, just think of where we would be if Malcolm X didn't step up, if the various founding members of the Black Panther Party didn't step up. I would contend that things would be far worse than they are for us now, if indeed that's possible. All right, because things are pretty damn bad for black people in the United States right now. So anyway, let me move on to the next story that I would like to share. Again, thank you to Jared Ball and Glenn Ford for that report. I do want to jump to this story about this Texas racist white male shooting into the campaign headquarters for a black woman who is running for sheriff down there in Texas in Jefferson County. Let me just share a little bit with you from this dailymail.co.uk article. Police have arrested a man in Texas after he allegedly fired shots at the campaign office of a candidate for local sheriff while shouting racist slurs. Zena Stevens, a black woman, is standing to be sheriff in Jefferson County with the election set to take place today. However, last night, a white male is accused of pulling up outside her campaign office in a white Jeep and fired a shot at the window while shouting, "Fuck the niggers." It is believed that around 25 people were inside the office when the man struck, including several members of her family. But despite the weapon causing the glass at the front of the building to shatter, nobody inside was hurt. Let me see if I can pull up a report from NBC News, which was published about a couple of hours ago, maybe 4 or 5 hours ago, and see if we can hear from Miss Zena Stevens herself. Again, this occurred, this terrorist attack. And I would say it is a terrorist attack, down to the strict definition of terrorism.
What's he doing?
He's moving to Metro PCS.
Okay, let me let this ad play. But yeah, you know, terrorism as defined, the definition of terrorism is when you use violence to push a political agenda, to intimidate people. It normally has something to do with politics and whatnot. And so this white racist male apparently doesn't like the fact that a black woman is running to be the next sheriff of Jefferson County. So let's give it a listen. Okay, I'm not hearing anything.
When we heard shots fired and the glass, the shattering of the glass, and, you know, people, it scared people and people scrambling, you know, for safety. I don't know whether, you know, the individual that did that was trying to, you know, community or stop the election or stop, you know, me from running for sheriff. None of that's going to happen. I'm still a part of this community. I love this community. You know, it's just senseless ignorance.
All right, so you just heard directly there from Zena Stevens, and she certainly is putting her life on the line, and she knows it, and she says that if you're looking to get me out of this race, well, it's not going to happen. I'm going to continue to run. So shout out to Mrs. Stevens. I don't know what her politics is like or whatnot. I don't know what her stance is on 21st century slavery and human trafficking, being that she is a university police chief, all right, and you know, a career slave catcher and whatnot. I don't know, but you know, a lot of people still don't realize that the drug war is wrong. So I don't know what her politics are, but I do appreciate her bravery and her steadfastness in not succumbing to a terrorist attack, in an attempt to intimidate her and prevent her from seeking to become Jefferson County's next sheriff down there in Texas. So shout out to her. But again, I submit to you, to those that want to tell me that, you know, or not just tell me, but tell black voters that we're just wasting our time and that we won't end white supremacy by voting, I would say you're correct. We won't end white supremacy election by election. Casting and getting somebody in office will not end the white supremacist system, but it will chip away at it. What it will do is hopefully remove a white supremacist or a tacky, trashy white racist out of office like a sheriff. You know, because we're hearing too many stories of horrific treatment of black people and people in general. I read stories of, you know, that was concerning other non-black people where they're being abused and even murdered in these jails by guards and whatnot. And certainly Sandra Bland's case comes to mind. And so, again, these are important positions. These are indeed, you know, winnable positions. More so than trying to get somebody elected president, you will have an easier time if you contribute, if you organize, and if you turn out the vote, of getting a Zena Stevens in office than getting a whoever into the next position of CEO of USA Inc. All right, so I'm glad that no one was hurt. Let me start following her on Twitter to keep up with this woman and see what's going on with her down there. So this is the primaries right now in Jefferson County. It does have two white males that's running against her for the Democratic nomination. She is part of the Democratic Party. And whoever wins in the primary will run against the Republican, which is a white male. Now, the articles I read did not say if he was the incumbent or if one of these Democrats were the incumbent. Because incumbents can in fact be challenged. All right. Most times they're not challenged, but they can be challenged. So, again, this just also speaks to just being battlefield awareness, you know, knowing what's going on at all times around you. You know, some people call it defensive driving when you're driving and, you know, you're just being aware when you approach intersections. You're just aware of everything that's going on around you. That's called defensive driving. Well, you know what we have to do as black people? Have to do defensive living in this place behind these enemy lines. We have to always be aware of what is going on, who is where, and doing what around us, you know, so that we don't have any unnecessary casualties out there on the battlefield. But thankfully, none of the 25 that were inside of Miss Stevens' office were injured, and we're happy to at least see that. They have arrested this man, even though none of the reports that I'm seeing is giving out his information of who he is and what his possible connections. He also had other people who were, they're not being described as being arrested, but being detained and brought in for questioning. Because what I did read, one of the details I picked up is that he was in the passenger seat of his Jeep when he fired these shots into her campaign headquarters. And so somebody was driving, right? So, you know, are they trying to determine whether or not this person, if this was a planned terrorist attack, or if this man was just riding in the truck and noticed they were passing her campaign headquarters, and he just pulled out his gun and shot into the building, and the driver was unaware. That's possible, because that actually happened to me as a teenager coming back from a club with my cousin in the passenger seat and a family friend in the back seat. And we go to pass this white guy on a motorcycle on the highway. It's like 2 a.m. in the morning. We coming back from a club, and the next thing I know, I hear boom, 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 and our family friend in the back seat, for whatever dumbass reason, took a shot at the guy while I was passing him. So I didn't know that he was going to do that and whatnot. So it is possible that the driver did not know. Okay, so anyway, just be aware, people, that we, you know, live on the battlefield. And especially if you're running for important positions of office, like a sheriff and what have you, there are going to be some people out there that don't like that. They don't want to see you participate, and they will do whatever they can to derail you from pursuing what is your right to pursue. All right, I'm going to take a station identification break, and then when I come back, I want to talk about Justice Clarence Thomas posing some questions, and they just clowning him in the media. Now, he does give you a lot of ammunition to clown him with, but this is an important case, and he posed some very logical questions. But the articles mostly are focused on clowning him and the fact that he rarely, if ever, poses any questions, leading people to question his intellectual capacity. And so, you know, I've read three articles, and they're basically all saying the same thing, you know, acting like they're so shocked Clarence Thomas, the black conservative judge, said something instead of focusing on the case and the very important questions that he asked. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. Again, if you have anything you would like to share in commentary, there are several ways you can do so. You can give us a call on the conference line, 7641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. Hit *6 and 1 to put yourself in the caller's queue. You can also use the web-based flash phone to do the same. And you can also call us via the studio line, which is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
When we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is fixed on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says it's supposed to be is, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog. You'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to,
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station, providing you with independent black voices speaking out on various issues. All right, so this next story that I want to jump to is pertaining to Justice Clarence Thomas. Before I do that, somebody commented on my Facebook timeline about this story about this black woman, Zena Stevens, running for sheriff, and the comment that she said, you know, she made about it being ignorance. And Brother Ralph, longtime listener, contributor to the Black Talk Media Project, said she called the shooting ignorance. It appears like he knew what he was doing. Yeah, I caught that too, Brother Ralph. He's not ignorant about what he was doing. All right, that is conscious hate. These people are not practicing racism out of ignorance. These are conscious decisions to hate people based on them being of a different ethnicity, being a different skin color, even a different religion. This is just conscious hate. It is not ignorance. It is just simply not. So, you know, maybe she misspoke. I don't know. But I'm glad to see that she's safe and nobody was harmed during this period. During this terrorist attack, I should say. All right, now getting to Justice Thomas. All right, so as I opened up the program, I was talking about, you know, this case that came before the Supreme Court this week, and how most of these articles, mostly of them are reprints of the Associated Press article. You'll find them on different websites. They're clowning Clarence Thomas, and it's not that I want to defend Clarence Thomas, one of the most dangerous proxy racists in the United States of America. So it's not that I'm trying to defend him, but I'm just trying to point out that, you know, the story shouldn't be about clowning Clarence Thomas. It should be about pointing out the importance of a case that is pointing out to people that, hell, the Congress, the U.S. Congress, has put laws on the books, okay, through the People Activity Area Number 6 politics. They have put laws on the books that say that you will be, have your Second Amendment rights terminated for life, even if you just been convicted of a misdemeanor assault charge. So I'm going to jump ahead in this article where it is just talking about people being shocked that Clarence Thomas asked the question in more than 20 years and whatnot. But it says that I will go ahead and jump to the meat of the case. All right, Thomas' gravelly voice unexpectedly filled the courtroom and enlivened an otherwise sleepy argument about gun rights. Shout out to Huey Newton. He peppered Justice Department lawyer, what is that? How you spell her name? Ayanna, I think. That's my daughter. But my daughter's name, that's what it sounds like, is a different spelling. Ayanna Eisenstein, who was trying to wind up her argument with 10 or so questions that seemed to be a vigorous defense of the constitutional right to own a gun. And so, you know, I know a lot of people in the black community, they follow behind the liberal thought that, you know, the Second Amendment doesn't guarantee us the right to have a gun. And a lot of us are anti-gun, but I'm not. I am not anti-gun. I am not anti-preserving my life by any means necessary. And, you know, just looking at my own family history, the only way we have survived deep in the South behind enemy lines is because we were armed and would shoot. You know, now I'm thinking about the good book, Negroes with Guns. Our great ancestor from North Carolina, Robert F. Williams. That's the only way we survived, is by the gun. I have no doubt in my mind, if not for the gun, they would have lynched each and every last single one of us. There would have been nothing to stop the white mob from advancing and just wiping out all of us. Not just some of us, wiping all of us out if we didn't have the means to protect ourselves. So anyway, getting back to this story. Miss Eisenstein, one question, Thomas said. This is a misdemeanor violation. It suspends a constitutional right. Can you give me another area where a misdemeanor violation suspends a constitutional right? Now, look, I know there's an issue with domestic violence, not just here in the United States, but all over the planet. There's an issue with domestic violence, whether it's males beating on females, whether it is people in homosexual relationships abusing each other. Domestic violence is an issue. I'm not going to deny that. And that is something that we have to address. We do need to address it. It's not something specific to any one community. It's not Hispanics are beating up their wives and girlfriends more than anyone else. It's not white people are doing it more than anyone else. It's not that black people are doing it more than anyone else. It's just a simple fact that it shouldn't be going on at all.
regardless of who's doing it. And I do have to point out, if we want to look at the largest demographic, or I should say the most violent demographic when it comes to domestic violence, that is cops. Cops are the number one abusers of their wives and girlfriends, because perhaps they know they can get away with it. Hell, they get away with so much more. So anyway, that is what, I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't be addressing domestic violence, but let the punishment fit the crime. And I hold, you know, not only my human rights, and I do believe I have a human right to own a weapon to either defend myself or to feed myself. I have a human right to a firearm, all right? And so, but, you know, this case is referring to whether or not, like Justice Thomas said, you know, name another misdemeanor that someone can commit that will have a constitutional right stripped from them, all right? So, I mean, if I get convicted of, let's say, driving without license, that's a misdemeanor offense. It's not a felony or anything like that. And let's say I get convicted of driving without license and whatnot, okay? In addition to me getting fined or whatnot, are you going to strip away my voting rights as well? My constitutional right to vote, does that suspend my, you know, how the heck do you get to do that? If I get convicted of driving without a license, do you get to then say I don't have the right to own firearms and I need to turn in my guns? What does that have to do with it? See, this is why, again, politics is important. It is politicians who put these things into law that then affects us wherever we may be behind these enemy lines. All right. So, again, just to recap, this one pertains to two cases. You had a guy who slapped his drunk wife. He shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have slapped her. Shouldn't have put his hands on her in that manner or whatnot. I can't imagine anything that she did to warrant getting slapped. You know, well, she could have cussed him out, called him everything but a child of God, but I don't think that warrants him slapping her. And so he got convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence assault, and they took away his gun rights for life. All right? Then you had another man get in an argument with his wife, and he pushed her. She wasn't seriously injured, or she wasn't really even injured at all. Again, that's no excuse. You talk with your words. You don't use your hands, especially towards someone that you claim to love and whatnot. You don't do that, man. You just don't. You don't do that. So I'm not making excuses for what these men were convicted of doing, misdemeanor assaults. What I'm saying is that law, whatever law, because it's not telling me what law that they are debating. But it was a law that was passed by Congress, so it's a federal law that bans people convicted of domestic violence from owning guns. Okay? So, it's not going to stop. You pass all the damn laws you want to. It's not going to stop. It's against the law to murder people. People still getting murdered. It's against the law to speed. People still speed down the highway. All right. So you taking away a person's right to own a gun doesn't mean they won't go out and get a gun. As one of these guys did. They found a bunch of guns in his house, even though he had been convicted of misdemeanor assault. And so to me, that is serious. That is a serious punishment, and it doesn't fit the crime. It just simply doesn't. So, I mean, if I go out there and let's say it's not my girlfriend or wife or whatnot, and let's say, you know, it's my neighbor. Let's say my neighbor is an asshole and we don't like each other. And he does something to make me angry, and we have some words, and he gets up in my face, and I was taught that you never let somebody invade your personal space and throw the first punch, because it could be over. with the first punch, especially if they got a knockout punch. You be knocked out within seconds, so you don't let people run up on you and throw the first punch. So he comes up and invades my space, and I punch him in the temple, and I knock him out. And I then plead guilty to misdemeanor assault. You know, he didn't have to be hospitalized or nothing like that. He just got knocked the hell out and whatnot. And I plead guilty to misdemeanor assault. Does that mean then that I should have all my guns taken away from me that I used to hunt with, that I used to protect the home front and whatnot? No, no. That does not seem just to me. Not just, I'm not even going to use the word seem just. It's not just. It's not just. And so, you know, I appreciate Justice Thomas's questions on this, because it's a very important question. And the woman said, no, this is a misdemeanor violation. It suspends a constitutional right. Can you give me another area where a misdemeanor violation suspends a constitutional right? So this also points to equal protection under the law, which I think is Fourth Amendment. Is that the 14th Amendment, I believe? Why should I be treated differently for a misdemeanor assault against my domestic partner, and I wouldn't face this penalty if I, you know, got convicted of a misdemeanor assault against some Joe Blow on the street? See, that's discrimination right there. So in order for that not to violate the Constitution Equal Protection Clause, then that punishment has to be applied to everybody who is convicted of a misdemeanor assault, and not just those who assault their, you know, marital partners or whoever they're in a romantic relationship with. It's not just. It is not an equal application of the law. And I think that, let me see, this is something else Thomas said. He said, okay, Eisenstein noted that violating other laws can, in some cases, limit a person's free speech rights under the First Amendment. Now, she didn't give an example, but the key word is she said limit, not take away, not permanently ban, but it could limit. Thomas said, okay, so can you think of a First Amendment suspension or a suspension of a First Amendment right that is permanent? See, he picked up on the same thing I picked up on. It was a topic no other justice had asked about, and his comments came after several of the other justices seemed to favor the government position that the law applies whether the abuse is intentional or reckless. So he's questioning, they're on some other trip, and he's questioning the constitutionality of lifetime punishment over a misdemeanor crime. Now, me, myself, I think lifetime punishments are unconstitutional. Like, if I've been convicted of a drug crime and I get a lifetime banishment from being able to receive food assistance, even if I have a job and I'm paying taxes and whatnot, after I get out of prison, or, you know, I may not go to prison, but I'll be on probation and I'm working and I'm paying taxes and I'm paying into all, you know, these funds that you're setting up, or you're, you know, distributing this money that you collect from taxpayers to people who need help and whatnot. But yet, if I lose my job, then what? I can't get it just because I got convicted of a drug conviction? So does that apply to people who get convicted of shoplifting, you know, misdemeanor shoplifting charge, or writing bad checks? Do they get banned permanently from public housing as drug felons are? Banned permanently from the SNAP program as drug felons are? See, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about, if I've done my time, if I served my court mandated punishment, how is it constitutional? How is it practicing justice then that I then, after completing my sentence, that I'm still being punished for the rest of my life? That's unconstitutional, man. That's cruel. And while it may be usual in today's modern society, it's still cruel. And it's not equal, it's not adhering to the Equal Protection Clause. So I don't know how this is going to go, what they're going to ultimately rule, but it looks like that the Supreme Court of the United States is going to uphold a unconstitutional federal law that permanently bans people from owning firearms if they've been convicted of a domestic violence misdemeanor assault, which means they don't even go to jail or nothing like that. They probably just pay a fine, be on probation, told to stay away from the person and what have you. I don't think that that's right. I don't think that's correct. So just wanted to bring you all to bring you all's attention to that and why who gets appointed to the Supreme Court is important. I'm hearing now that CEO Obama is talking about nominating a Republican, a sitting Republican governor to the Supreme Court of the United States. Because from what I have observed, Obama, and I suspect that this could happen, he has always been willing to compromise with them conservatives and give them what they want and getting nothing for us. He's always been willing. Just to get something passed, he will cut people's food stamps even further, which he's done, all right, just so he can get something passed. Anybody that knows President Obama's politics, this man is not a progressive, all right? He is a right-winger. He is a right-winger. He's just not in the Republican Party. He's a right-winger. But like Glenn Ford and them were saying, you know, it's really not two parties. It's the same dang-gone party. And both of them need to be destroyed and dismantled by any means necessary, so... yeah, it is important. These positions are important, man, because, again, it affects you whether you vote or not. Whether you vote or not, this affects your Second Amendment rights. So, there you have it. Let me see. I think I have one more story to share with you. I'm going to skip over the police terrorism where they have killed multiple people. That's just one story I had bookmarked, but again, let me see. A kill by police has updated their database for 2016. I'm on killbypolice.net. Let me see. I'm still not seeing the 2016 database. I'm going to have to get in touch with them and see what's going on with that. Because the only thing I'm seeing is the totals from January 1st to December 31st of the number of people killed by police that was reported. Because remember, a lot of these police don't even have to report to anyone how many people they're killing. But last year we saw over 1,200 people get killed by police in this country behind these enemy lines. Don't tell me it ain't no war out there. Let me see. We do have a caller. Let me go ahead and bring the caller on. Area code 973. Thank you for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Mr. Reed. How are you?
I'm not going to complain too hard.
And to all the listening audience, I'm so sorry. I kept going. Yesterday I called in. I kept getting there was something wrong with my phone, kind of going in and out there. I don't know what was going on, but it's much more steady today. But anyway, there was some things I just maybe probably about a good 2 minutes that I just want to talk to you about in terms of Melissa Perry. You were talking about her yesterday, and
yes.
I actually got a chance to read the New York Times article about her. And some things you were saying were very, very on point, and it's so true. I was given a lot of thought in consideration only last night, thinking about why isn't it that like people like Melissa and other black journalists get together, and I thought about what you said with respect to crowdfunding and start a platform. I wish they can all come over to your network. That would be wonderful if they can get a program going. There's so many people, Mr. Reed, on the East Coast. I'm like only about 20 minutes from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so many people who have, you know, the defunct stations that have gone on that I have a list of people who would be just wonderful for the Black Talk Radio. And I just wondered to myself, you know, do they ever get in contact with you? I mean, I don't know if you heard of this person by Ntume. Have you ever heard of him? He used to be on the open line where he substitutes sometime. I don't know if you listen to any of our stations here on the East Coast. There's only one that comes on from 8 to 9 o'clock.
No, I primarily only
I'm not going to mention on the air because I know I don't, you know, you're not supposed to do that. But I'm sure you probably heard of the open line.
No, I don't got a problem with the names of different networks and platforms being mentioned on it. I support the Black Talk Media Project supports all black people involved in media production.
Okay, because I know some if you set a station on like a, you know, a national on air or like a radio station on air on the airwaves,
not the
airwaves, that you can't mention that because they don't want they did not like they didn't want you competing with the other stations or whatever. But the open line is the only show here on the East Coast right now that comes on from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It used to come on for 2 hours, but they narrowed down to one. And they do a show, and it's been totally watered down. But they're, like I said, again, I really applaud your idea of having all black journalists come together like Melissa S. Perry, who doesn't have to worry about her platform being watered down or anything like that, and why they have not come to that. I mean, you talked earlier about, you know, having a person vote and not know who they're voting for, which is, to me, is so criminal. I mean, you rather, like you say, you just rather not vote at all than to vote for the wrong person. I mean, if we had more shows more people knowing, let me just make sure I say that correctly, more people knowing about your show, the Million Conscious Voters and things of that nature, and it can get the word out, people can become more informed. And I'm so glad also, Scotty, that you have talked about how, you know, mentioning that like, people don't know because they really don't know. Like I was telling Gus on his show that I didn't know about, Long Live the Spirit of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing until I heard the Cal show. I mean, here I'm on the East Coast. I'm like, my mid-40s, and I've never heard of her. I heard of the ISIS papers, don't get me wrong, but I never really got into it. I heard of the name mentioned, not who she was, per se. So, you know, a lot of things are kept from us because we don't get the hard-hitting news that your network does to us. You know, there's a lot of stuff. I was sitting down one day listening to a program, and one of my friends happened to hear it. He was like, I didn't know the Hillary did this. I don't know if and he just changed his whole mindset about her. It was great. You know, so like I said, I mean, I wish maybe, I don't know, somehow that, you know, you being in what you do, that maybe you could send letters out to these people or somehow they can get the message that they can come together and we can have a great platform that, like, you can say what you want and make no mistakes, but you know what I'm saying. You don't have to make any apologies for what you say because it's very real, hard-hitting news. And I'm, like I said, I'm very grateful to have found your station and get the great news. I like the roundup that you do every day. And I appreciate that you're very honest and candid. Sometimes you go off the farm, but I know, you know, you get emotional and, you know, you're just compassionate and you love what you do and you want to get the message out, Mr. Reed. So I do hope in the future that the black journalists can come together and get a station going or interact with your station or somehow a platform that we can learn the truth about, you know, what's really out here that we really need to know. And I thank you so much for giving me this time to speak, sir.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. And thank you. Just a couple of quick notes. I reached out to the National Association of Black Journalists about 4 years ago, and I told them what I was doing, and I was trying to make content. Well, this is how I even found out about the National Black Association for Journalists,
was I was doing out in the field doing work for the 2010 census. And so me and my daughters and what, we were out there, you know, interviewing people about the census and talking to them about, you know, the different aspects of why you should fill out the census and how it relates to resources coming back to your community. And we were recording it and stuff because I had gotten a grant from another nonprofit to, you know, produce that type of media. And so I met this guy while I was out there. You know, me and my daughters were out there interviewing people, and he gave me his business card. And, you know, he was a member of the National Association for Black Journalists. And so I was telling him about Black Talk Radio, and I was like, you know, we're over here building independent media, just telling him, you know, about what we do, about our network, and that, hell, I would love to, you know, help you, you know, do whatever it is you want to do in the area of journalism through our network, you know, whether that is coming on as a commentator from time to time, whether or not that's launching your own show. And so then I looked up, you know, the organization that he was a part of, and I found out, oh, this is a national organization for Black journalists. It's the largest in the United States. And so I reached out to them. I sent them emails. Again, I was telling them what my vision was for the Black Talk Media Project, and that, you know, I hope that, you know, as an organization, that they would look at, you know, whether it was working with the Black Talk Media Project or whether it was, you know, just doing it in-house through their own organization, is looking at utilizing new media technology to reach our people with information, unfiltered information that is not going to be edited by someone who is not a member of our community or whatnot. We know how corporate media works. If you work for a local newspaper, you're subject to editing. You know, they'll edit your article, tell you to change this, tell you to change that. They will ask you not to use certain type of language, and you don't want to be offensive or alienate certain people. And so, you know, really, when our Black people that are in these fields in the corporate media, like a Melissa Harris Perry and whatnot, you know, they are struggling. They are struggling to, if they even have the mindset of wanting to tell people the truth, they struggle to get that truth out because, again, they have producers, they have editors, they have bosses at these white corporations. And so, you know, we shouldn't even expect, you know, we can want, but we shouldn't expect to get the real, uncut, raw information, commentary, opinions, what have you, from these people, because, you know, they're getting a paycheck from the enemy. That's the enemy's platform, and he's not going to allow you to liberate Black people with information and knowledge through his platform. It's just not going to happen. They might allow some truth to be spoken or certain things to be covered and whatnot, but for the most part, they are not there. They don't have you on there to provide Black people with real actionable intelligence, information that they can act on. So I reached out to them, and I never got a reply. On their Facebook, I followed them on Facebook. They got a Facebook page. I was on Facebook, and they posted about Melissa Harris Perry and seeing how they support her and this and that. And I wrote again in the comments section the very things that I stated on the program yesterday. Why aren't Black journalists coming together and building independent platforms to where they are not controlled and they are in control? And, you know, maybe, and it doesn't have to be a nonprofit thing like, you know, Black Talk Media Project. It could be a for-profit thing, you know. And the Young Turks, for example, I used that example yesterday, the Young Turks, which have a YouTube-based internet radio program. They got their own platform as well. But, I mean, if you look at their media production, their video media production, it is just as quality. It looks no different than what you see on CNN. I'm talking about in terms of the aesthetics, the sets, and the graphics and all of that type of stuff. And they've been doing that for a number of years now. And they're making money doing it. So why aren't black people doing it? Why aren't these black journalists that are getting fired, contracts not renewed, or being censored by corporate media, why aren't they using new media technology? And it's not like it isn't already being done. All right. Again, Baltimore, the Real News Network, even though it's owned by a white person, it is primarily black dominated, you know, with the host, the Jared Ball. We just heard from him. They focus on a lot of issues pertinent to black people. I think the owner, his name is Paul something. I can't remember his last name, but he's a socialist and whatnot. And he gives those black people on that platform, the Real News Network, autonomy. And he doesn't try to control their voices, from what I'm hearing from Jared Ball and the others. And just based off the content that we get from them, it's not watered down. It's not censored, and they're talking about real issues. But again, you know, there is nothing standing in these black professionals' way to do their own platforms. Maybe they won't reach start now that she started tomorrow and whatnot. Maybe Melissa Harris Perry won't reach 2 million people. I don't know what her listening audience was, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays. Maybe she got to work her way up to that. But with her name recognition, if she came together with other black journalists that also have that name recognition, and black people found out that they had their own platform, man, black people would be tuning in. They wouldn't, man, they already got a built-in audience, is what I'm trying to say. And so it may take them a number of years or what have you to attain the audience that they might have on the other platform. But damn, I don't care if you're reaching 2 million people a night, if you ain't giving them, you know, uncensored information that they can act on, then, you know, hell, what's the point? I don't watch the news to be entertained or anything like that. I'm trying to find out what's going on in the world so I can formulate strategies and what my behavior should be in relations to whatever it is they're talking about. So I you know, I can't speak for them and why they are not pursuing these avenues, but I certainly would be here. The Black Talk Media Project would be here, you know, if they wanted any kind of consultation with us, and you know, anything we could do to help them. That's what the Black Talk Media Project was founded for. Although we focus primarily on radio, we are starting to move into video. But you know, there's a lot of equipment that we need to purchase. There, we need staff in order to do it the right way and whatnot. So you know, that is an area we will be looking to get into. Let me go to another caller. We got another caller. Area code 404. Thank you for calling in to Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question or your comment.
Oh, greetings to you, Scotty Reed. This is Sarah.
Hey, Sarah. Long time no hear. Although I did hear you on Time for Awakening, it was good to hear from you.
Oh, you too, Scotty. My work schedule has been conflicted with, you know, this is tax season, so we tend to get kind of erratic here trying to get these people their businesses, get them going.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't help but I said I'll turn in because Ralph had mentioned to me that he was going to be listening to your show today. So I said I'll try and hear as much of it as I can. And I have to agree with you on independent black media and these black voices that are being purged from most of the news realm. And it all happening at the as Yvette Carnell, as well as oh, that was Paul J that you were trying to remember.
Paul J, yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are seeing, I was never a fan of Melissa Harris Perry. I believe most of her dialogue was tend to be, she was pushing this new concept that they call intersectionality,
mm-hmm.
which they're trying to make everything about gender and race and all of that. And she was, you know, she was kind of weakened as, I've discussed with some of my friends, it's to be expected when you have children of who want to call themselves of mixed ethnicity, or they say that they are, you know, they have a white parent or whatever, they're not going to come down hard on the side when it comes to racism, white supremacy. I found that they tend to be wafflers. They, because it's kind of self-indicting. Because you have a parent that you love that give birth to you, that is in your life, and you are in some or the other, you are indicting that parent if you come down on hard on white supremacy. So that's why I didn't expect anything hard hitting from her, because on her show topics, she never did. Because every time she had a topic or she was covering an issue that had to do with racism, she always would have somebody Jewish sitting in on there, and then they would bring in the Jewishness, trying to do a comparative analysis with Judaism or with the LGBT issue, mm-hmm. or with Latinos. It has never been an issue that dealt straight outright where you have a panel of Black people on there that knows about what we are experiencing as Black people. Forget the other gender issue, forget everything, because before mm-hmm. everything else, you are Black. Before you ever talk about gender, male, female, or LGBTQ and all this other stuff, it's Blackness. When the cops stop you and they're harassing you, they're not stopping you because you're a gay person. They're right. stopping you because you're Black.
Right.
And you've got a profile, and therefore, that's what they're going to, they're using to harass you.
Right.
But they always bring in all of these transient things to come into it and conflate the issue, which is what she was good at doing, which is why she lasted as long as she did on MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what MSNBC was all about. Because I remember I listened to Dr. Boyce Watkins, and he said the same thing. He said that the only time that they want somebody Black to come on there is if there's a race issue, then all of a sudden they run through their list of all of the Black people that they could talk about race. But I don't want to come on and talk about anything that your expertise is. As she said, she's a political science professor, has a PhD in that. But I don't want her to talk about political science.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to keep in mind that Melissa Harris Perry came to fame as a result of her of what she did to Cornel West and with Tavis Smiley.
Right, right.
That is how she gained her platform.
That's how she gained favor with the white supremacists over there at MSNBC.
Exactly. That is how they love her, because before she used to do the guest appearance like Michael Eric Dyson and all of them, they used to come on and just, you know, whatever they want to talk about, you know, issues dealing with Blackness. But then as Barack Obama came into the White House and they became the firewall for Barack Obama, and they start blocking and the people who are dissenters start saying things about him, then all of a sudden that, you know, they were given more prominence and they were pushed up there. And now that Barack Obama is winding down and he's on his way out the White House, now you're seeing all of these Black voices. They no longer need them, because it's going to be a white person in that, whether it be a Hillary Clinton or a Donald Trump, it's going to be somebody white. And they don't need all of these Black people sitting up on TV up there to give commentary about what's going on with a Black man in the White House and with Black America. We're irrelevant. They're going to have a lot of Latinos. They're going to have a lot of gay people up there. They're all going to be given platforms to speak and say what they have to
say. They already got them, though. When you look at CNN and Don Lemon and what's that white guy name?
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper. Yeah, they already are permanent fixtures in that area. Mm-hmm.
Which is true, but now since that they have the Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right. You're saying it's going to be even more.
Has been with the Supreme Court and what this White House has been fully on board with that. There's no longer anything to hide. These people are fully much out in the open, and they've become bullies and thugs, which is why Roland Martin lost his spot on CNN and he had to go over to TV
News One.
It's because these the LGBTQ people, they are some racist thugs. If you don't say and do what they want, they have the money, they have all of the resources, and they have all of the media covered that they can go out there and they can basically whiteball you so that you don't ever have a position in
assassinate your character. Yeah.
Which is what they've done, and which brings us back to your platform that you were saying. Why it is that we are so tied to the plantation and white people, and so dependent on this check that you're getting from these white people? Because from what I heard with Melissa Harris Perry, her she was like a million and a half. She was making over there at MSNBC for her weekend show, and her contract was getting ready to expire in October.
Right.
So she had enough time between now and October that even if they don't want her on air, so what? Hey, you know what? I don't have to show up on the weekend. I can stay at home. I can grade papers. I can spend time with my husband and my children. You know,
and still collect their paycheck.
I collect that check. This is what I'm saying. Oh, that's what I would have done. Okay, y'all don't want me. Y'all want to preempt my show. I have to travel from North Carolina to New York every weekend to do the show. So I get to stay home. I'm not fussing. I don't care. But you see, this is the ego thing with a lot of us, and ego, because that's, like I said, that's how Melissa Harris Perry was created, with this ego, with her Troy Nyes and Cornell and Tavis. To know that same ego got her to lose this job because she overplayed her hand. She thought that she could, she got all these people that like her, all these followers, and they're going to come to her defense and stop MSNBC from cutting her, because they're going to say, well, okay, we're going to let her get her show. You know, we're going to stop preempting it, and we're going to let her have her weekend show. And this is political season. What did she expect?
Right.
That's what everything, all the channels you turn on, that's all they talk about is politics. It's going to be that from here all the way up to November.
Right.
And when November is over with, they're going to be talking about the transition team and who's going to be in the White
House.
Now,
Sarah, now I can understand her asking a question. Look, I'm a political science major. I'm a professor and whatnot. And, I know politics, so if you're going to preempt my show, at least let me participate as a commentator. Now, I could see if that's the argument that she was making, but she ain't even making that argument. I thought emotionalism got it, like you said, kind of went to her head. She got emotional, and she just, to use somebody else's phrase, turned into a drama queen. And whatnot. And my whole thing about it is that I told my daughters, I talked to my daughters about it, and I talked to them, they asked me questions and tell me about stuff that's going on in the job. And I try to tell them to be codified. I tell them to listen to the cows on Saturday night, particularly the, part where they talk about workplace racism. And I try to tell them how to conduct yourself professionally on a job. You having problems, okay, you want to quit, all right, look for you a job, and even if you find it, just put in your 2 weeks notice, because that looks good on your record and whatnot. When you just up and quit, or you say some emotional things to people, then that can cause you problems down the road. So that was my aspect. Now, of course, Melissa Harris Perry ain't in the same position as my daughters would be. But still, though, I thought that she set a bad example on how we should conduct ourselves as professionals.
I agree with you, because first of all, you don't ever send an email to the people. First of all, those are not your employees. Those are people who belong to MSNBC, and they allocate them to you to work on the show that they give to you. That's not even your show. That show belongs to MSNBC because it's their copyright. You're just the host that they're paying. You're actually the functionary for that show. So if you got all comfortable and you're going to be sending out emails to your staff, that people that you think work for you, what makes you think that these people are not going to turn this email? Because we know with people in office and office communication and gossip.
Yeah, office politics.
There's always somebody who don't like you, and they're ready to take you down because they want to get to where you at. So they're going to leak that doggone email. Because you talk about all the top honchos at MSNBC, you put their names in the doggone email. So what do you expect when you see what they find? They said, okay, first of all, they probably was putting up with you anyway, because they were trying to turn the station into another Fox, just like CNN trying to become like Fox, where they see all the money is. That's where they were trying to go when they start getting all of these Negroes. And they're only going to keep Rachel Maddow around because she's gay. And she's somewhat liberal, so yeah, we got a two-fold with Rachel Maddow. But all the rest of y'all, we really don't need y'all. We can start getting rid of y'all. You gotta expose yourself now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start calling people's names, and then plus you gonna say they're bringing on professional liars. Now you start ego tripping by saying, showing out all your, what I've taught at these high, at these very prestigious institutions for the almost two decades. And now they're bringing on professional liars within which to call these political games instead of me. They don't have to call you.
Right. You know,
stay home and get your check.
You know, outside of her, I didn't know she was making that much a year. You say she was making over $1 million a year? Man.
A million and a half?
I mean, that's good bank right there. So, I would have been happy to leave. I'd have been like, you know, I don't like all the things you said, I spend time with my family and all this and that. But look, this is the way, what I want to say in the way I'm looking at it and getting back to what our prior caller was saying about, you know, if she got that kind of money in the bank, you know, she can certainly build a home studio and do her own damn thing right there from her home. Okay, if she got that kind of money, she's been paid that kind of money over the past years that she's been on MSNBC. You know what? I would look at this as an opportunity for me to gain my independence and freedom. Now I don't have to go through a producer and argue with you about what I'm going to talk about today on my program or this and that and whatnot. And so, you know, again, outside of her politics, it seems to me that if you're main issue is that you're doing this not because you need to do it, because she made good money as a Wake Forest professor. All right. She ain't, you know, in danger of, you know, being in a soup line or anything like that. All right. If she's wise with her money. But I would look at that as, I would just simply build my own home studio and I would launch my own program and platform and then invite some of my other, you know, black journalists or professionals or whoever and build my own platform. And I just don't see why these people ain't doing that. If their real interest is in providing us with the right information that can empower us as a black community, or is it that they just want to be on white people's TV?
They want to be on white people's TV. They want to be validated by white people because, as you said, with that type of money, she's been doing this for a little over 4 years. She's been out here doing this stuff. I think she started in 2012 or somewhere around there. She started with MSNBC doing this show. As you said, this woman makes pretty good money for with them, MSNBC, her job there at Wake Forest, plus the books that she has written and all of the lectures that she goes and she does these lectures that I guess she do it in between breaks or whatever, that she's on the road doing these lectures. So I'm sure she's making pretty good money. And if she said you're investing and you're putting aside that money, then yes, you can run a home studio and you can do, like you said, the Young Turks, what they are doing with YouTube or with any other platform. You can run that thing on there. But these people, they are tied to the national media and they feel that that's the only way they're going to be validated is they have got to be on one of these three-letter media platforms within which to feel themselves validated. They don't want to go out on their own. They don't want to cut that string and get off this the plantation as much as they can and establish their own freedom. They want to be on there because, as I said before, they've all dogged Tavis Smiley. But look at Tavis Smiley. He's like the turnip. He's been slowly plodding along. And all of them have been, that's been talking nasty about Tavis. They've all been dropping by the wayside. And Tavis Smiley is still plodding along and still doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He and Mr. Beat. They try to get him off. They try to take his sponsors from him. They try to do everything to Tavis Smiley. But look where Tavis at.
And why? Simply because he was objective in providing analytical data on terms of poverty and being objective in terms of this president and not just simply looking to, you know, defend him cause he's black, but looking at him as they would look at any other president.
They want to keep that White House invitation to be running in and out in there. As I said, you know, they're starting to be up in there, you know, playing some things and, you know, just kicking back at the barbecue and shooting ball and, you know, some hoops and all of that. That's what they thought this White House was going to be, just another weekend hangout, like a frat house. That's what they thought, but it didn't turn out to be that way. Mm. So now all of them are slowly weeding themselves out of the place, while Tavis is still hanging in there, Cornell is still, you know, hanging in there doing what he's doing. And all of these defenders of this president, he hasn't even looked in their direction. He could care less about, you know, what's going on with that, because they all served as a functionary to do what was needed from this White House, these blockers. Now they're going to really be out there on their own. Now they're going to want to run back to the black community. and ask us to provide them for cover and all of this stuff here, because with Donald Trump or even with Hillary Clinton coming up in there, these people are going to really and truly feel the squeeze. And you know what I say to them? We need to let them feel the burn. That's what we need to do. We've got to stop providing these things to these people who feel they could do it any kind of way. And then they're going to run back and say, well, oh, look what the white people are doing to us. No, they're not doing it to us, because we were already getting it. You're the one they're doing it to. So don't come over here trying to tell me I need to provide you cover when you wasn't providing none for me for the past 8 years.
Right. Well, Sarah, we're going to leave it there. We got Tando Radio Show coming up in 5 minutes.
Sir.
And I was just it was certainly good to hear your voice today. And, I just hope that you remain safe, you and your family, behind these enemy lines. And know that that offer for your very own radio program on this station is waiting for you when you retire.
Yes, sir. But thank you for the compliment, and we'll look into it as the years wind down, Scotty. But thanks again.
All right. You have a good day.
You too, Scotty.
All right, folks. Just real quickly, before we wrap up, I just want to share this article. I'll talk about it more in depth as more information comes out Thursday. But it appears that you have some three young black men, Muslims, and it also appears that they're from the continent, that they're not from they're from Chad and South Sudan, all right, and they were found, three of them were found murdered, all right, in this house that was a gathering spot for teens and young adults. I'm hoping this isn't something drug related or anything like that. I'm not reading anything like that, so I certainly don't want to make those allegations against them without any proof, but I'm just saying that's a possibility. That's a possibility. But somebody murdered these young men, three of them, all black, all Muslim, and it didn't make a blip on the mainstream media. In fact, I only came across it through TeleSurTV.net. Which I think is a Venezuelan-based outlet. And we even had a person on Twitter who was saying that they live in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Oh, by the way, that's where it happened. And they didn't hear nothing about it, even on the local media. So anyway, we hope that this wasn't a terrorist attack. It's just so tragic to see, you know, the loss of life of these young black men. So that's a story that hasn't been getting a lot of attention. And I'm going to try to look more into it to find out what's going on there in Indiana in terms of these three black Muslims being gunned down. All right. Tando Radio Show's coming up. Just a moment here. Brother Dave will be doing part two of the program he did yesterday. Today is Winds of War, part two. So make sure y'all stay tuned for that. All right. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Matter of fact, you need to recognize that the entire planet is a battlefield. As we see, black life is under assault all over the world. And we need to develop battlefield skills, battlefield awareness, so that we don't become such easy victims, so that we don't become casualties, and so that we can get working towards building a force to be reckoned with. At some point, we have to move from being about self-defense to moving to the offensive in this war that has been waged on us for hundreds of years. With that said, peace and blessings to all. I'll be back on air tomorrow night on New Abolitionist Radio. Have a good day.
I got so much trouble on my mind, refuse to lose. Here's your ticket. Hear the drummer get wicked.